We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Welcome to Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics. Here's your host, Todd McKim.
Hi, everybody. Todd McKim, and welcome to our first edition of Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics for the athletic year as we get you ready for football season and a lot of other things going on campus. The school starts this week, first game against UC Davis. A little bit later on, we'll hear from Athletic Director Jim Knowlton, get his update on the new initiatives that have been forthcoming from the athletic department and campus. So a lot to talk about in this, the very first show, but we start with football, as always, with head coach Justin Wilcox. And at what point during the week, or maybe it's the month, you start to get the butterflies with the first game right around the corner?
Well, you know, as you start the game week, you kind of get into that mode and you start watching the other team. That's always exciting. And I know our players and our coaches are excited to get going. And I think the key is you kind of guard against some of that because you need to have a great week of practice. But the energy is there. Now it's just going out and have a great week of prep so we can come out and play our best.
Is it the thought that it's finally here? Yeah. It's finally here after all those months of prep and recruiting and this, that, and the other. It's finally here.
Yeah, this is why you do it, you know. And all those things are so important. I mean, spring football is extremely important, summer workouts, fall camp, recruiting, all of it plays a part. But this is what it comes down to. And, you know, the great thing is our guys have done a great job in the off season of, you know, working out, and then the spring football and fall camp, they've been real focused and had great energy on the practice field. So I'm excited for our team. You know, we, like I said, need to have a great week of practice, but I know they're excited to get out there and play somebody else.
Go back a ways. You had a relatively early spring football schedule. You had a longer period of time after that between the end of spring ball, certainly the end of school, and then into the summer. Have you seen benefits of that when you came into camp this year?
Yeah, I think you see them just in the size and build of our players. I think that jumped out once we got into, you know, our summer workout program. You know, the O linemen and the running backs and even the receivers, some of the guys I could, you know, kind of mention somebody or a few guys in each of those groups, they just physically look different. And the goal was to get bigger and stronger with more time in the weight room, you know, over a without breaking it up, I should say. And so they did a great job buying into that, and came into fall camp looking good. And, you know, there's still the, you got to get into football shape and you use different muscles, and there's nothing quite like playing football. So they've done a really good job at camp of working on that. But I think physically we're as big and strong as we've been since we've been here.
Well, what were your impressions of fall camp? How did it go? Did you get installed in the work that you wanted done?
Yeah, we actually kind of sped up our installation process with the experience on our team and a lot of guys coming back who'd played quite a bit on both sides of the ball. We went really heavy installation early and then really focused on the details for the rest of camp, and got some really good days in with scrimmages and things like that. And then we also had some really productive more mental days. And, you know, the guys did a great job of kind of focusing in each day of what the purpose was for that day. And it was a very productive camp and relatively healthy, you know, going into the first game, which is great. And now it's time to put it out there and execute.
Obviously, when guys come back, the coaches have the same feeling. They're really excited that first couple of days of fall camp. And then it starts to set in, and you get to week two and week three, and now you're week four when you got a game to look at. How did your team respond mentally during that period of time where practices and all those film sessions can be really, you know, tedious and tiring mentally and physically?
Well, first thing is to talk about it and acknowledge it. You know, we talked first day of practice. Yeah, everybody's going to have great energy for day one, day two, day three. Then it's, okay, how do you sustain it? And what's your focus in meetings and really competing with themselves when it's meetings or walkthroughs or practice to bring that same focus and same energy, because that's what can separate people. You know, everybody's going to be excited to play when we run out of that tunnel, but what we need is great work this week to prepare ourselves to play. So I think they did a really good job of that, and it's easier said than done, no doubt about it, because it is a pretty long fall camp. But, you know, that was part of the challenge that we talked about day in and day out, is that focus and energy it takes every day to be good.
One of the things you did this year, you do it every year, but this year I thought it's pretty cool. You had the Olympic Games for football players. And I tell you what, looking at some of those videos, you could see where it lightens up the mood and it takes the edge off a little bit and gives the kids something to kind of still be competitive in, because it was really competitive. But at the same time, it's a lot of fun too. Any one of those or two of those events that you thought were absolute hits?
Oh, well, it's, you know, the idea was to kind of break the team up, and so each of the coaches drafted, and you know, they would have guys from different positions, and so that was really neat. And then I think we had 16 events or so, anywhere from trivia to free throw contest and bowling, and there was we had water slip and slide, we had all kinds of different things,
wiffle ball,
and so it got very, very competitive, which you expect it would, and the guys loved it, and you know, it was awesome because it did. You know, each day it kind of would break things up, and they didn't know what was coming. And so, and the other neat thing was, you know, guys on the team who they would maybe show up in one event, and guy you wouldn't even think about. And so it was pretty cool to see that. And it got very competitive. We had a committee of judges that, you know, would take the complaints. I acted as the commissioner, and I'd have to rule on a couple. But for the most part, we went through. It was really smooth. And then Coach Baldwin's team actually came out. It was tied at the very end. Coach Baldwin's team won it in the very, very end. So it was pretty fun.
And what was the final event? What put them over the top?
Well, we had to finish with an event because I think both teams had 106 points or 109 after the 16 events. And so they finished with a very, very intense game of cornhole to win it. So it was fun. And there were some prizes on the line. So, you know, first, second, and third all got recognized. And also team number 10, which was Coach Alexander's team, they had a couple things they had to handle as well for being the last place team.
Oh, so maybe next year.
Next year. Well, there's always next year, right? There's always next year. I did enjoy the slip and slide because you had various body types there that, I mean, some guys went all the way, and some other guys maybe stop a little quicker than others. And then the wiffle ball competition, too. I remember watching some video of our All-American linebacker, Mr. Weaver, and he struggled. And I remember him, like, the next day or so, the media got a hold of him. And he just absolutely said, you know, the video guys are my enemies now, because they actually showed that stuff. And Obviously, some guys, truth can hurt.
Truth hurts, you know, and we've, you know, he talked a lot early on about whether it was wiffle ball, bowling, golf. We had a pitching contest. I mean, Weave was making a lot of noise, and there was, I think he had a couple humbling moments. Now, the good thing is he had a great fall camp in football, and he's playing really well and knows what he's doing, but the Olympics were not as kind to Weave this year. Yeah.
Well, everybody has their strengths and weaknesses. But it was a lot of fun. I thought it was a great idea and a wonderful way to keep the spirits up during fall camp. Also during fall camp, you, if you have the opportunity, and it doesn't happen every year, you got a chance to award some scholarships to guys that are either walk-ons or whatever the situation is. You awarded three of those, I believe, this year. And at the end of that practice, I think it was last Saturday, I think the people that were as excited as anybody else were the teammates for their own, you know, fellow student athletes. That was great. Tell us how you go about doing that.
Well, we always like to keep a couple open. And, you know, we take the walk-on program very, very serious. It's not an afterthought for us. And I think it provides, you know, leadership in the locker room. I think it really builds on your culture of guys earning what they get. And I'm really happy for them, and they deserve it. So Ricky Walker, who's been here and kind of been through some ups and downs with injuries and position moves, but really just kept on working at it and has done some good things for us. He'll help us this year. So Ricky was the first guy, and then Jake Tongis, who's a tight end, another Bay Area guy that's done, you know, just gotten better and better and has practiced very hard and found his way, kind of carved out a role. So excited for him as well. And then Ben Hawkschrider, who's, you know, transferred in, grew up here in Berkeley, you know, coming to games as a kid and had the opportunity to take other scholarships elsewhere, but really wanted to play here at Cal. And, you know, he, throughout the summer, just his work ethic, his approach to meetings, he's a, you know, very mature guy, great for our locker room. And then getting on the field, he really did a, you know, produced, you know, and ultimately you have to produce and provide something on the field. And he's done that. So we were able to put those guys on scholarship. They're well-deserving. And I think it does a lot for our team.
And it's nice that all three are local guys. So that adds the value to that scholarship for those three players. And we'll see all three of those guys this year, that's for sure. Tell me about, I think sometime this week, you're going to go into the new locker room facilities, thanks to Aaron Rodgers, a big donation from Aaron. That was great to see. It's good to see him back on board, that's for sure. I know there were a few things that delayed the fact that you were getting into those new locker rooms. So what does that mean for your program?
Oh, it's huge. And we're just so appreciative of Aaron doing that. I mean, I was down there this morning, and we're moving in this afternoon, and it's going to be awesome. The players are going to be so fired up, and they've kind of stayed out of there, so they don't exactly know what it's going to look like. But it's big time. And, you know, to have somebody like Aaron, you know, support our players and our program that way, it means everything, and we sure appreciate it. And I know our players are just going to be so excited walking in there this afternoon. It'll be fun to watch them.
It will be, that's for sure. That's when you wish you were in the TV business instead of the radio business, because you can see the reactions. That's for sure. The other thing that happened over the summer was a huge donation by a diehard Cal fan, Brian Cameron. Has stepped up big time, and they've instituted what's called the Brian Cameron Center. We're going to talk a little bit later on in the podcast with Jim Knowlton about how that happened. But this is an opportunity for kids to have help to move forward after football. Well, what does that mean to have that kind of a program here on campus for your guys?
Well, yeah, again, what Brian has done really changes the scope of our program in football, but also just the athletic department, because you look at the comprehensive support that these guys are going to get, these student athletes are going to get, I should say, and what that means for their future, because that's ultimately what we should be as good at, more so than anybody in the country, because of our institution, the strength of our institution, our alumni, where we're located, all those things. And I'm just really thankful to Brian and really excited how Jim's pushing this forward, and it'll pay dividends for our players who are on our roster. It'll pay dividends in recruiting. And so I was excited, you know, when this all started way back when, because it just is a game changer for the department and our program.
And I think they're going to hire a director for that maybe sometime this week. Excuse me, I got a little frog in my throat, but we'll get rid of that as Justin goes to the cooler, which is loaded, by the way, with water. So we appreciate that. Thank you very much, Coach. Talk a little bit about, we're seeing a lot more this year after year, this transfer portal. And we're going to talk about UC Davis here momentarily. But it's really become a big thing in college athletics. It's not just football. We see it a lot, maybe even more so in basketball, quite frankly. How do you manage that? What is the effect that you have seen? And what's the effect, do you think, going forward with the ability now of the student athlete to, if he doesn't like a situation, basically move on to another situation and a lot of times not lose any eligibility in doing that? What are your thoughts?
I think we're all learning how to navigate it because it is a part of your roster management these days. And I think what we're looking for as a program is just some clarity on the eligibility. Yeah. You know, we understand that things happen from time to time and people will make decisions that they need to make. I think what we're looking for is a little more clarity on, you know, the waiver situation that comes up, whether it's conference to conference or in and out of conference. So everybody's kind of learning to navigate it. We've seen it. You know, I think everybody is, you know, whether it's players that are leaving your program or players that you're bringing into your program through the portal. But it's, you know, I think there's also needs to be some awareness on the student athletes' part that, you know, I think this past year there was more people in the portal than there were available scholarships. And so giving up something, you know, whether if they're on scholarship for something for the unknown and can be a little bit dangerous, I think. And, you know, for us, I think it goes back to recruiting and making sure we're getting the right people in our program. And I'd love to say we're going to bat 1,000. I don't know if that's, you know, possible, but we're going to do our best. And people will make decisions from time to time that they need to make. But again, it goes back to them being educated on the information and on in terms of what's available for them, maybe what isn't available, and learning how to kind of navigate that situation for themselves and us as a program too, because it's pretty complicated. Yeah. And it's just part of college football and college athletics right now. And as I mentioned before, I think the big thing for the programs is you're looking for clarity on eligibility, and I think the players need to know that as well.
I think the coaches that are probably most concerned with it might be the coaches at the FCS level. They get a guy for 4 years, and then you get a kid that wants to, and good for the kid, maybe in his final year he wants to compete at a higher level. So it might have as big of an effect on some of those programs as it will on the FBS programs where the level of competition is kind of pretty much the same.
Yeah, I could see that. And I also think – you know, the generation, it's a little bit different in terms of how the teams and the players view it. It's, you know, more mobile. I mean, you look at high schools now and kids will transfer high schools once or twice or even three times during a high school career. And, you know, I think, you know, 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago, the teams reacted different as a whole, you know, when somebody either came in new or decided they wanted to leave. There was, you know, that team chemistry or just how they viewed that was a little bit different. And, you know, right or wrong, you can have your own opinion. I think we all do. But I think you see it more, you know, just how normal it is for people to kind of jump from one place to the other in athletics these days.
And as the saying goes, the grass is not always greener on the other side too. So it's an ongoing topic, and we'll see how it plays out over the next couple of years, that's for sure. All right, final thoughts here, and we'll talk more in the pregame show about UC Davis, but this is a team that tied for the Big Sky Championship last year. They lost three games all year. Two were to Eastern Washington, one in the regular season, one in the playoffs themselves. Coach Hawkins, who you're well aware of, worked with Danny over the years, done a terrific job over there. Real quickly, your thoughts on UC Davis and the opponent this week.
Well, you mentioned it. Coach Hawkins done a fantastic job. He's a really good football coach. They got really good coaches over there, and you know the history of the program. I mean, when you look at their team from last year, again, 10 wins, you know, they're moving the ball on everybody, scoring 40 points a game, a lot of shift in motion. Quarterback's a really good player. Got tight end, a back, a couple backs, O-line's coming back, receivers with a lot of production. You know, defensively, they do a great job. They're kind of a odd and even team, run to the ball really well. They don't make very many mistakes. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just the end of it. That's how you know they're well coached. And they're going to come in here to win the game. And we know what's in front of us, and it's important. Our players have seen the tape, and they realize it. So we have a ton of respect for them and know what kind of team they are. So our guys will be excited to play.
We'll be excited to watch. A reminder, we'll have the game this week. Join us for the pregame show. And Joe Starkey and Mike Pawlowski with the call of the ball game as the Bears take on the Aggies of UC Davis. And a reminder, at any time you want tickets, 1-800-GO-BEARS, and come out and watch the Bears this year at Memorial Stadium. All right, Coach, we appreciate it. And we will talk to you in the pregame show on Saturday.
Thanks, Todd. Go Bears.
Joining me now on Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics, is Athletic Director Jim Knowlton. About 18 months into his tenure, and a lot of things have happened and will be happening in the course of the future. And we appreciate you taking the time. I know Justin, the first question I had for Justin today is, at what point in time do you start getting the butterflies with the first football game right around the corner? So I'll ask you the same thing. Do you get the butterflies, and have you gotten them already?
You know what? I think it's probably not butterflies as much as it's, okay, have we taken care of everything that we need to get done to make sure that our student athletes are set up for success, our fans are going to be engaged, and you know, anybody who comes and supports us is going to enjoy their day at CMS, you know, the California Memorial Stadium.
Why don't we start with that, the game day experience, because we've got some things you've expanded upon, some new things that the fans will experience this time around, starting Saturday against UC Davis. Kickoff time is 3:37. Pre-game show is at 2:30. Let's talk, first of all, the tailgating, because I know in years past it's been great and awesome, but last year you instituted some concerts. In fact, for this first game against UC Davis, we're going to have a repeat performer, Petty Theft, and I've seen them away from campus. I've seen them at a couple locations. They're awesome. But this concert concept, I think, has really caught on nicely for you.
You know, it's, I think as we sit down at the end of a season and think, okay, what a great year we had last year. You know, we increased our attendance by 17% year over year. You know, we sold out the student section three of the last four games. And, you know, you sort of take a breath and say, wow, that was great. What are we going to do next year? How do we make it better? How do we get people off their couches? How do we really make this an engaging event? And so, you know, the concerts, the games that we did concerts, the reception was incredible. And really, we spent a lot of time talking to fans who said, wow, I didn't even know there were concerts. I heard it, but didn't realize it was on Maxwell Field. So we're really making a double concerted effort to say, yes, before every game, we're going to have a concert. Yes, it's on Maxwell Field. Come early, enjoy it, and really get a taste of this game day tailgate experience that we're trying to build, you know, as part of every one of our home football games. So, yeah, so it's exciting, and it's Joe Mulford has done a lot of work, and I think it's really going to continue to engage our fans.
You get a football game and a concert for the price of just the football game, so how do you beat that, right? Then also, we're going to have some new things for people as they enter the facility, kind of like what we had for basketball last year, metal detectors and so forth, safety factor. And then during the course of the game, people will have more access to beverages this year with the expansion. I'm all about expanding of the wine concept here. Wine and also beer. Tell us why, because I know five other schools in the conference are doing that. Why and how do you see that enhancing what you're going to do on game day?
Well, I think there's a lot of pieces that you just talked about. You know, the first is we want Memorial Stadium to be a safe stadium. And so I think despite the fact that metal detectors will provide a little inconvenience, and on our first game, we're probably going to have a couple bumps in the road as we try to get everybody through and on time and get them in so they can watch the game. But I really believe that we want people to feel very comfortable that this is a safe environment that they're going into. And then we've talked to a lot of our fans over the years. We've surveyed them, we've communicated with them, and one of the things they ask for is, well, you know, why can't we have a beer or have a glass of wine during a game? And so we did a lot of work. We coordinated with a lot of people. We did a lot of testing. We really wanted to see if it was something we could do while still maintaining this family environment. And so, yeah, so we have implemented that. We're gonna add some concessions that serve alcohol. You know, we've also made some areas alcohol-free, including the student section and some family sections. And we're going to really pilot it. And if it works, great. If it doesn't, then doggone it, we're gonna do whatever it takes to make sure that we can keep a safe environment in the stadium. And so we're hoping that our fans will approach it maturely, and I'm sure they will. And I think that it'll enhance the game day experience, because what we've found is, you know, some fans tell us, well, I have to do 6 shots before I leave my tailgate, so I keep my buzz through the half. And you go, all right, we don't want that. That's what causes problems. So I just think it allows mature adults to drink responsibly if they'd like to have a beer during a game.
And I know there are some places where people have actually had to leave maybe the stadium to do that, and then they don't come back. This is a situation where if they do make that concession run, there's no excuse for not coming back to their seats.
Absolutely. And again, you know, Memorial Stadium is a huge home advantage for us, a home field advantage. And when our students are there, when our fans are there, the place is rocking. And our kids will tell you, and our kids have said it last year in some of the post-game interviews, that the fans made a huge difference in having them there. And so we want them to come. And, you know, as you look across the national landscape, so many teams are struggling because their attendance is going down, and we're going the opposite way. And, you know, I'm really proud of our student athletes who helped move in the students, you know, football and volleyball and field hockey. And so, I mean, it was great to see them out there helping during move-in day. And all of it's in an effort to integrate us into the campus and have people connect with our student athletes as well.
A lot of connection going on, because this is the first week of classes. This is also an opportunity for you and your administrators to reach out to the new student athletes. And then on Tuesday, had a big function, big barbecue, where all the student athletes were invited to kind of intermingle with each other. Sometimes during the course of the year, they go their own separate paths. It was a great opportunity this week for all of those kids to get an opportunity to meet each other, kids from other sports, to get to know each other and start that bonding process.
Yeah, no, this has been a fun week. And yesterday, with all of our new students, we did a half day where we brought them in as a group and really talked to them a lot about this inclusive environment that we're trying to develop here in the athletic department. And, you know, I listened to our student athletes do testimonials at the end of it, and I couldn't believe they were 18-year-old young men and young women talking about the opportunity we provided for them to express and share and talk about their backgrounds and how we can all work together in this inclusive environment. And then today, you know, we do our Big C Welcome Back Barbecue. And when you go into the Haas Pavilion and see 850 student athletes all in their team gear, holding up a sign that looks like the Olympics, and then you get to see all of our coaches, all of our department, all our senior staff. You know, so 300 of our staff, 850 of our student athletes. The chancellor came and kicked it off for us. Our student athlete Golden Bear, GBAC chair, kicked it, introduced and talked, and you just go, wow, this is amazing. Meg Conkey talked, Joe Ruth talked about being a Big C president and executive director, and it was a chance for us to celebrate last year. So all of the teams that had 3.0s, I had them stand up and get a huge cheer, and we also celebrated All-Americans and national championships, and then we also talked real about some of the expectations for ambassadors for their programs and for our school and for our athletic department and what that means and the accountability and the sort of the higher standard that we expect them to live and lead. And, you know, as I told them, I said, there's a million kids who would trade places with them in a second to be a varsity athlete at the University of California, Berkeley. And don't take it lightly, and don't lose focus on what's important, because it goes by in a flash. And if you haven't really committed yourself to being exceptional in the classroom and being exceptional on the field or the court or the pool, it's a missed opportunity that you'll regret the rest of your life. And so, yeah, we had a lot of fun. And, you know, I gave all the new students a quiz and gave out some hats. And, yeah, we had some good fun.
You like those quizzes. I've been on the road with you, and you like the quizzes and giving out the merchandise. I think people appreciate that, too. You talked about the classroom. I think it was something like 15 out of 26 programs either matched or exceeded what they had done in the past. He had seven programs, had perfect 1,000s. So the academic component has been phenomenal, and it's gotten better and better each and every year. And then, you know, in a national basis, there's the Learfield Cup, which we're obviously proud to be a part of at Learfield IMG College. 20 consecutive years in the top 20. I mean, that's remarkable, that standard of excellence, but the consistency of the excellence.
No, but I think it's one of those things that we hold as a litmus test for our success. And so last year we were 20 in the nation, and that's of all Division I programs. This year we were 18, and our goal is to be in the top 15, then the top 10, and then the top 5. And we've developed a strategic plan that helps focus all of our efforts and resources to those metrics that we've determined really help us be exceptional. And I think the Learfield Director's Cup improvements will come with the focus of what we've really done with this strategic plan. So I'm excited, and yeah, it's hard to believe the year's starting, but we're getting after it already.
Let's talk about the strategic plan. You announced that last week. I'm going to go over a couple of the what are considered the priorities: athletic experience, academic success, competitive success, financial resources, departmental culture. You've talked about that. Diversity, equity, and inclusion, and campus integration. So it's wide scope. It's a working document for the next 5 years. Tell us the effort that went into putting this together, and then how you see this being implemented as well.
Well, I think the thing I'm most proud of is just how our entire department embraced the development of a strategic plan. And to get to the point where we could do a strategic plan, a lot of things had to fall into place. And so, you know, we were lucky we had the Collegiate Sports Associates had done a really extensive review on the department before I got here. Mm-hmm. And then Martz and Lundy had done a real heavy review of our fundraising and development capacity. And then I did listening days for my first 90 days. And when you put all of those together, we were really able to get a good picture of where are we right now. And then the next step was, let's visualize where we want to be in 5 years and in 10 years and in 20 years. And then this strategic plan was developed with seven committees around those seven priorities. And we had 85, 90 people from the department that were involved. And I've told this story, but walking down the hall and you've got an assistant equipment manager talking to someone from sports information, talking to a head coach, and then a senior leader about strategic planning, and that's not happening in the hallways of many athletic departments. And I was really excited to see the way we embraced it, to see how much thought went into what it's going to take for us to be exceptional. And now the hard part starts. You know, having a strategic plan is great, and one or two things can happen. You throw it up on the shelf, and 5 years later, you do another big celebration of a new strategic plan. Or you can do what we've got planned, and that's every quarter continue to put a mirror up in front of us, how we do and evaluate each of our, you know, of our seven areas, the priorities, and then all the details. We've got 40 pages of spreadsheets of metrics that we're going to hold ourselves accountable on as part of the strategic plan. And so I think if we use this as a management tool and we use it as a living document that's really aspirational, which it is, this is going to help lead us to where we're trying to get to. And that's, if you look at our vision statement, it's comprehensive excellence, the model of comprehensive excellence in intercollegiate athletics. And that's truly what everyone believes. And now we got to go out and get after it.
You know, as kind of a part of that, whatever priority that you want to put it under, whether it is diversity, equity, inclusion, campus integration, whatever, you've got a new program that we're going to see next year about this time, the Cameron Institute. Brian Cameron, big supporter, came up big time to help get this thing funded and started. You're hiring, or have hired, a new director of that will start in the near future as well. Tell us how this came about. Brian obviously had a vision that he wanted to contribute back in some way to the campus and the athletic department, and how you see this enhancing the opportunities and what the student athlete goes through during their course of time here at Cal.
Well, first of all, Brian Cameron's been an incredible supporter of athletics and really the university for many, many years. And in my first week, so I started on Monday. On Friday, he sat in my office and challenged me and basically said, we need to do a better job supporting student athletes and their student athlete development. And so, you know, I listened, and I've finished my listening days, and he was right. I mean, he was dead on. And so, you know, we started working with him, developing what we thought would be truly a transformational institute that is going to help our student athletes with career development, the community engagement, and then personal and leadership development over there 4 or 5 years. And we went back and pitched a plan. He gave us some feedback, which I've called the Cameron Commandments, and I framed those and gave them back to him. But really, he gave us a little more help with the vision, and what we have come up with is something that is going to be so incredible for our student athletes. And today we announced the hiring of Marissa Nichols, who we had 120 applicants for the director of the Cameron Institute, and the quality of the applicants was just off the charts. And in her case, she was even that much better. And so she'll be here on the 18th of September. We just in fact sent out the release today, and I'm just tickled pink. I mean, I feel like I'm almost giddy because I see this as not a year from now we'll start to make a difference, but we're gonna start flying this plane while we build it, and we're gonna have an impact with these students this year, and it'll just continue to get better each year.
Give us some specific examples of what this program will do for the student athletes.
Well, if you look at, for one, the career development piece, some teams do it because they bring in someone who's an alum, and some teams don't do it. And this will give us, no kidding, a place where we can connect with the Career Development Center here, because one of the problems is they're not open when our student athletes are available, so we don't use it. Well, so we'll have a satellite in the athletic department that can connect with all the resources that are available to campus, but it'll also be a place, a node that connects all of our former student athletes back to us as well. So now all of a sudden we've got these incredible former student athletes who are doing great things in almost every single field you can think of. How do we use, leverage, communicate with them, and help them help the next generation of graduating student athletes? So that'll be one piece of it. Another one that, you know, when I did senior exit interviews, the seniors would say, boy, we love doing community service, but it's so hard to figure out how to do it. We don't, you know, so now I'll have someone who's focused on, you know, bringing opportunities to our student athletes. So I would imagine we'll pick two or three causes each year, and we'll focus 850 student athletes and give everyone a chance to give back. And what I found is our student athletes are blessed to be here. And when they give back, it really helps them appreciate where they are, but also you feel great about helping community, connecting with community. And so I really want that to be a part of their developmental process, because I think if we plant the seeds during their 4 years here, those seeds will be continued to be sown over many, many years once they graduate. And then the last piece is just leadership development and personal development, everything from, you know, the basics of, you know, learning how to do the checkbooks and stocks and things like that to really a holistic look at how do you develop as a leader, you know, over your 4 years here. And so, I couldn't be more excited. And Marissa is just first class in her experience and what she's going to be able to do for us.
Well, a lot going on. A lot of seeds have been sown, so to speak, and now time for some of that fruition to come forth. Certainly, when you talk about the fall sports, some of them have already started, and some will be underway this weekend, including football. And we're all excited about what should be an exciting football season, built upon a bowl game appearance a year ago. Jim, I know you got a lot to do. You're a busy, busy man all throughout the year, but this week probably as busy as any week that you have. Appreciate you taking some time to be with us, and have a great year.
Todd, thanks a lot, and go Bears.
Go Bears is exactly right. So we'll be with you each and every week, or at least most weeks, 12 times during the football season. And we'll come your way 12 times during the basketball season, but it won't always be just football and basketball. So each and every week, we'd love you to stop by, take some time out, whether you're in your car, you're at home, whatever it happens to be, and join us for Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics. A reminder, on Saturday, the Bears against the Aggies of UC Davis will be on the air with the pregame show beginning at 2:30, kickoff at 3:37 from Memorial Stadium. As always, if you're looking for tickets, 1-800-GO-BEARS. And for all the information up to date as far as Cal Athletics, calbears.com. I'm Todd McKim. Again, thanks for joining us, and go Bears.
This has been Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics, with your host, Todd McKim. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation.